How do we hold on to our faith in a world that's trying to devour it? That's the question we started wrestling with last week. How do you hold on to faith in a world that's trying to rip it away and tear it apart and stomp on it? And last week, you may remember, we started talking about the story of Daniel. And we said that one way to hold on to our faith is to remember our identity. And we looked at Daniel's life and how he was, as a young man, probably in his late teens, ripped away from his home, dragged off in exile to a different place, Babylon, a different kingdom, and for 3 years systematically indoctrinated, taught a whole new religion, taught a whole new history, a whole new language, given a whole new name in order to strip away his identity. And we talked about how Daniel learned that no matter who's in charge, God's in control. And we learned that Daniel came to the understanding that who you are isn't based on where you are, but on whose you are. And that's what we established last week, is if you're going to hold on to your identity, you need to remember that your identity is not based on where you are, it's based on who you belong to, God. There's another part to holding on to our faith, though, that I want to talk about today. That's a little bit different than holding on to our identity. Today, I want to just have us think about this idea that holding on to faith is about holding it out. That another way to hold on to faith is to hold it out. And that makes no sense, because if any of you pay attention to football, you know that if you're the running back, you're taught ball security. You take that thing, you tuck it in, and you don't let anybody grab it. And that's how many of us look at faith. You grab that thing, you tuck it in there, and you hold it. And you'll see them sometimes, they get both their arms, and they're just running like this, and it looks silly, but they're doing it because ball security, always hold on to the ball. You don't hold on to faith just by doing this. Faith isn't football. One way we hold on to faith, the main way we hold on to faith, is by learning to hold it out. Because if you can't hold out your faith, you've probably already lost it. It's probably already gone if you can't hold it out. So today we want to wrestle with that. I've got to be able to hold out my faith. Jesus himself said, you don't light a candle and stick a basket over it, right? The Apostle Paul said that we shine in this world, we shine in this twisted and dark world by holding out the faith, the life that Jesus has given us. If we're going to hold on to faith in this world, in a world that's trying to devour it and chew it up, then we need to learn to hold it out. And for most of us, that's a little bit scary a thing. Most of us, when I say that, begin to get a little nervous. We're not sure what exactly it means to hold out our faith. Does it mean I go stand on a street corner? Does it mean I get up at my desk tomorrow at work and say, hey, everybody, you need to know about Jesus? What is it I have to do? Like, for everything? Do I have to, like, when I'm eating lunch with my coworkers, say, excuse me, everyone, and then bow my head and pray? What does it look like? What does it smell like? What does it feel like to hold out my faith? And how am I going to deal with the reactions of my boss and my coworkers and my friends and classmates and my family and my spouse when I begin to hold out my faith? And they begin to see it, and that might get a little uncomfortable. The more I hold out faith, the more uncomfortable everyone's gonna probably get, right? And part of the problem is that you and I can't really imagine a scenario where those people around us change, where our faith makes an impact, and that makes us nervous about the idea of holding it out. That's why I thank God for Daniel. I thank God that this book is in our Bible to show us, because in this next part of Daniel's story, we're going to look at Daniel holding out his faith in an extremely difficult situation, and an uncomfortable situation. Daniel has to hold out his faith in front of King Nebuchadnezzar, who had come to the point and decided that anyone who says they have the answers to life's mysteries and the things that bother us is a liar and a fake and a fraud and deserves to die. That's where Nebuchadnezzar was. Do you know anybody who's kind of like that? Like, nobody knows anything. Stop telling me about Jesus. Stop telling me about this. No one knows, whatever. You know anybody who's like that? They just fed up with all the people pretending they've got the answers. There's a lot of people like that in our world. A lot of people you know who are like that. But Daniel holds out his faith, and somehow in the end, King Nebuchadnezzar goes from thinking anyone who acts like they've got the answers should die to saying these words to Daniel, saying, Surely your God is the God of gods and the Lord of kings. Now I want you to imagine your boss saying that to you. Imagine your coworker saying, wow, your God is real. Imagine your spouse saying that to you, your friend, the classmate. Imagine them saying that to you. And what would it take to go from where they are today to that moment where they acknowledge who God is? And that's what we're going to try and uncover and learn. What's that going to take? How do we play our part in it? That's what we want to see. So open up the app and you can follow along. Go to Daniel chapter 2. And we're going to share the story of Daniel and King Nebuchadnezzar. Starts in Daniel chapter 2, verse 1. It says, in the second year of his reign, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams. His mind was troubled, and he could not sleep. So he's disturbed, he's anxious, he's troubled. He's the most powerful man in the world with all the wealth and power anyone could imagine to do whatever he wants to do, and yet it's bringing him no peace. There's something wrong with him. Something going on inside of him, some depression, some darkness that's just disturbing him deeply so he can't sleep. And when he does sleep, that follows him into his nighttime and he has these dreams. And we don't know if he had the same dream over and over again or just if it was this one time, but he had this particular dream that shook him to his core to the point where he got up and said, I've got to know what this is about. I've got to understand this. And so he calls in all of his best and brightest. He calls in his wise men. And if you look, it says, you know, the magicians and the sorcerers and astrologers and the spiritually wise people. It's not like, oh, look what's in my sleeve, magician. These are people who practiced spiritual dark arts and all kinds of things. And they were believed to have power and insight and be able to do all kinds of stuff. They were the advisors to the king. And if the king wanted to know, do I go to war? The king would go to these kinds of people and say, should I go to war? Probably heard through movies or books of the oracles of Delphi or Delphi and any of those types of things where, you know, I want to know what do the gods say, so I go to these people who speak for the gods and tell me the truth. And so the king calls them in and they all get to the king's court and he says, look, I had a really disturbing dream and I need you to tell me what it means. And they all look at him and say, sure, king, we'll tell you what it means. And the king stops and says, no, you don't understand. I want you to tell me what it means, but first I want you to tell me what it was. Tell me the dream. And they're like, well, no, can you tell us the dream? And then we'll tell you what it is, what it means. And he says, no, you don't get it. You're not understanding me. I'm not a fool. I'm not an idiot. All these other times I've told you my dreams and you go and you conspire and you come up with what you think I want to hear or you come up with what you want to tell me to push me in certain directions. I'm not playing that game anymore. I want to know the truth about what I dreamed. I want to know what's real. And the way I figure it, the only way I know I'm getting the truth is if you can not only tell me what my dream means, but first tell me what my dream was. That seems a little unreasonable. How many of you go to the doctor and say, I'm here, doc, and they say, well, what's troubling you? And you say, no, you tell me. All right, no, you got to work with them. But it shows us where King Nebuchadnezzar is at. He's tired of the lies. He's tired of the tricks. He's tired of the fake and the phony. He wants the truth. He wants what's real, just like the rest of us, just like your friends. He wants what's real. He wants the truth. And so listen to what they tell him. They answer the king, verse 10, and they say, look, there is no one on earth who can do what the king asks. And no king, however great and mighty, has ever asked such a thing of us. So, king, you're being unreasonable is what they're telling him. And they say, what the king asks is too difficult. And listen to this. No one can reveal it to the king except the gods, and they don't live among humans. You know, there's a lot of people you know who are sick of all the pretend answers and solutions out there. And someone needs to be honest and say, look, no one on earth can give you the answer. No one on earth can give you the answer. Only someone divine can give you the truth that you're really after. Someone's got to do that. So the king gets angry because they can't tell him what his dream was. And he decides, you know what? I'm tired of all of you. You're fakes, you're frauds, you're phonies. I know it. I'm just... Kill all of them. And so he orders that all of the wise men, all the astrologers and all the magicians and all the sorcerers and all the, you know, these people throughout all of Babylon, he orders they all be killed. And so his people killers go out and they get to Daniel's house because Daniel's counted among these wise men, and they knock on Daniel's door. Daniel opens his door. Oh, how you doing? Hi, Daniel. Can I come in a second? Sure, come on in. Oh, nice room you've got, Daniel. Why are you here? What can I do for you? Why are you visiting me? And why do you have that big sword in your hand? He says, well, I don't know how to break this to you, Daniel, but the king kind of sent me to kill you. Sorry to be the one to tell you, but I'm going to kill you now. And Daniel says, whoa, why does the king want to kill me? Why is he killing the wise men? And they explain, here's what happened. The king has decided that all of you guys are just full of nonsense and you're not trustworthy and you're just liars and you're just pretenders and fakes and frauds. And because he had this dream and he wants to know what it means, but he's not going to tell you what the dream is. You've got to be able to tell him what the dream was, and then he knows you're telling the truth. So no one can do that. So you're obviously all just liars. So I'm here to kill you. And Daniel says, well, can I just have some time? and maybe I can do what the king asks. And so Daniel gets time to go and try and do what the king has asked. And immediately he runs to his friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And they get on their knees together and they pray. And he says, look, guys, we've got to pray and ask God to reveal this to us, to show us what this dream was and show us what it means so that God will spare our lives. And so they pray, and they through the night, they're praying and praying, and Daniel receives a vision from God, and God shows him the king's dream, and he shows him what the king's dream means. And so in the morning, Daniel gets up, and they take him into the king, and the king says, okay, Daniel, you know what the rules are here, right? I'm not playing the old game. There's a new game. You tell me the dream, then you tell me what it means. If you can't tell me what the dream is first, I don't care about anything else you have to say. You're a liar and you're going to die. And so Daniel answers in verse 27, says, King, there's no wise man, no enchanter, no magician or diviner, no one who can explain to the king the mystery he has asked about. And you can just see the guy in the back with a sword just sharpening it. Getting it ready, like, all right, here we go. But then Daniel goes on and he says, as for me, he says, there's no one who can tell you what you asked about. But there is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries. He has shown King Nebuchadnezzar what will happen in the days to come. Verse 29, as your majesty was lying there, your mind turned to things to come, and the revealer of mysteries showed you what's going to happen. As for me, this mystery has been revealed to me, not because I have greater wisdom than anyone else alive, but just so that your majesty may know the interpretation and so you may understand what went through your mind, what God was showing you. And then Daniel tells the king what his dream was about. He says, your majesty looked, and there before you stood a large statue, an enormous, dazzling statue that was awesome in appearance. The head of that statue was made of pure gold. And then the chest and the arms were silver. And its belly and its thighs were bronze, and its legs were iron, and its feet were a mixture of iron and clay. And while you were watching, a rock was cut out from a mountain, from somewhere, but not by human hands. Someone cut this rock out, and it struck the statue on its feet of iron and clay and smashed them. And then the iron and the clay and the bronze and the silver and the gold, all of it were broken to pieces. They became like chaff on the threshing floor, just like, you know, wheat, just blown out. The wind swept them away without leaving a trace. But the rock that struck the statue grew and became a huge mountain and filled the whole earth. And the king's jaw dropped and his eyes went wide. It's like, that's the dream. That's the dream I had. What does it mean? And Daniel tells him, here's what it means. It says, the God of heaven has given you. God of heaven has given you dominion and power and might and glory. In your hands he placed all mankind, the beasts of the field, the birds of the sky, wherever they live. He has made you ruler over them all. So you're that head of gold. And then Daniel goes on to explain that there are going to be these other kingdoms that are going to arise, these world powers. And after King Nebuchadnezzar, there'll be, you know, these others that come up. But This rock is going to be carved out of somewhere by divine hands, and it's going to come and smash all these superpowers that have ruled the world. All human power that has ruled the world will be smashed by this rock, and it will then turn itself into a giant mountain that will fill the earth. Over and over again in the Old Testament and prophecies, the kingdom of God is referred to as a mountain. That's what Daniel's talking about. That's what this dream is about. This is what God's going to do. The kingdom that God's going to establish is going to last forever. And then Daniel, after telling him all this, says, "Great God has shown the king what will take place in the future. The dream is true, and its interpretation is trustworthy." And that's when the king, just in shock and in awe at the realness and the truth of what he's encountered, for probably the first time in his life, he's encountering real truth because God has revealed this through Daniel. And he says those words that would be so hard for you to imagine your boss or your friend or someone saying, "Surely your God is the God of gods and the Lord of kings and the revealer of mysteries, because you're able to reveal this mystery." You know, it seems to me that we live in a world that's very similar to Daniel's, don't we? It's full of fakes and frauds and phonies. It's full of fake mysteries, fake magic, fake religions, fake power, fake faith. All these illusions are frustrating to anyone who is longing for something that is real and that is true. And we have the truth. But listen to what I mean by that. I don't mean that we know better than everybody else. I don't mean that we have the answer to every single problem that ever exists more than anybody else, that our ideas are better than all of everybody else's ideas. That's not what I mean when I say we have the truth. When I say we have the truth, what I mean is we have Jesus. Not some philosophy, not some idea that's out there. We have a person who is truth. Jesus himself. When we hold on to faith and when we hold out our faith, it's not a list of ideas we learned in a classroom. It's a person. It's Jesus, God with us, what he has done, who he is, and what he is doing. That's what we're holding on to, a person. That's what I mean when I say we have the truth. I mean Jesus. He is the truth. And this dream King Nebuchadnezzar had, it's about Jesus. Everyone loves to spend time trying to figure out, okay, if Nebuchadnezzar and Babylon, they're the gold head, then who's the silver chest and arms? Who's the bronze and who's the iron and the clay? And everyone has all these different strategies and schemes for who that is. And we try and understand who that is. And maybe we'll talk more about that down the road and as we go through Daniel. But the most important thing is who's the rock? Not who the other kingdoms are. It's who's the rock? If I'm there and I'm King Nebuchadnezzar, what's the question I'm asking? Daniel, who's that rock that crushes all the human kingdoms and powers and then establishes its never-ending kingdom throughout the world? That's what I want to know. And the answer is it's Jesus. Listen to what Jesus himself says about himself as he's on his way to the cross and knows he's going to be killed by the people he came to save, but that his death is what will then lead to him having glory and honor and power to crush all human kingdoms set up against God. He says, "The stone the builders rejected has become the cornerstone." Jesus was rejected by the people he came to save. And he says, "Everyone who falls on that stone is going to be broken to pieces." In other words, everyone who stumbles over Jesus because he doesn't line up with their expectations of what he ought to be and what they would like him to be, they're going to be broken to pieces when they fall over him. And then he says, "Anyone on whom it falls will be crushed." And he's quoting from Daniel there when he says that. Yeah, we live in a disturbing world. It troubles us for a reason. It's disturbing for a reason. It's disturbing because none of us really understands the future and understands power and who's in control, and we realize we're not in control. It's disturbing for a reason. It's disturbing so that we'll acknowledge that we need truth. We need something real. We need God. That's why this world is so disturbing, so that we'll recognize that we need more than we're able to build. The lie that everyone around us is falling for is that we can build a good life for ourselves. But what we all know whether we figure it out only when we get to the funeral or sometime before in life, is that everything I build is so fragile and can be gone in a heartbeat. No matter how much you've saved, no matter how much money you have in the bank, it can be gone like that. Everything you build is so fragile. And we're all trying to come up with answers to that. What seems best? What's the best way to build? But the truth is that the truth we really need can only be revealed by God, because he is the truth. You know, they thought, no one can know this, king, because there ain't no gods here. And Daniel steps in and says, there is a God in heaven. And we know that that God came and was with us. He became God with us. He is the truth. To know him is to know the truth. So for you and I standing here today in a situation very much like Daniel's, only we know that we have Christ now. We've seen who Jesus is, this stone that comes to crush all the kingdoms that we set up. We see that. So now how can you and I now be involved and engaged in holding out this faith in an environment like this that's so much like Daniel's? How can you and I, what can we learn from Daniel about this? And just two things, very simple, very obvious. The first one is this: be with. If you want to hold out your faith in this world, be with. There is no witness without withness. If you're not around people and with people and in contact with people, how can you possibly share that faith? How can you hold out that faith? No one's around you. You've got to be in contact with people. And for decades now, listen to me, we have privatized faith. Privacy is where faith goes to die. Privacy is where faith goes to die. And yet everyone around it just, no, that's what you think. That's what you believe. Just keep it in there. Worship God in your church with the people who agree with you. Worship God in your home. But don't bring faith into what we're doing here at work. Don't bring faith into all these other things. Privatizing faith. Faith has become like underwear. You're always embarrassed if someone sees yours, right? We try to cover it up and hide it. But that's not what faith is. If you can't hold out faith, then you probably don't have faith at all. You don't hold it by covering it up. You hold on to faith by holding it out. And that can't happen unless you're with other people. And look, if this were 100 AD, you know, a couple thousand years ago, I wouldn't have to say any of this to you, because we'd all be living in a culture that they lived in where everything was in public. You go to take a bath, guess what you're doing it? In the public bathhouse. The bathrooms, in the public bathrooms. Everything was in public. The houses that most people lived in, there was a front room where you usually kept, you know, storage and maybe animals. And then there's the room where everybody slept. So mom and dad, you're looking for some alone time? Guess what? Your kids are actually sleeping in the same room with you, and it's an 8x8 room. Go find your privacy, right? No one had privacy. And so the gospel spread like wildfire, because there's no way someone could be changed by Jesus and hide it. Because they were with each other, and everyone could hear the way you talk to your wife and the way you treat your kids and the way you act and how honest you were. There's no way to hide it, because everyone was on top of each other. And so the church grew like wildfire, because when people grab hold of Jesus, truly, really grab hold of Jesus, we're transformed and we're changed. But I have to talk about this for us today, because for you and I, it's so easy to hide our faith, to just bring it home and hide it and bring it to church and hide it. And if we keep hiding our faith, we probably don't have it at all. And I asked myself this question yesterday, and it just, oh, it's killer. I'm going to share it to you so it can bother you now. If three of my friends who don't know Jesus were to come and live with me for a month, what would happen? And that's, I mean, I hate that question. I love that question at the same time. Because in the one hand, it uncovers where my faith really may not be what it needs to be, holding it out for people to see. But what it also does is challenges me that yes, I can hold out my faith and influence the people around me. I can do that. God's given me all I need to do that. I just need to be with, is that first part, that first point, that first step. Be with, because God is using the uncomfortable of this world as it sinks into decay, into sin, to disturb us so that people seek the truth. And he's counting on us that in those moments when people are disturbed like Nebuchadnezzar was, that we stand up and we hold out that faith, that truth that he's given us. That's why he's put you where you are today. That's why you are where you are today. Being with takes at least two things. First one is perspective. If you're going to be with people, it takes perspective. Because you don't always have control over who you're with, do you? Right? You don't control your family too much. You don't always control who you're with. Daniel didn't have much control over who he was with. Dragged off to this other kingdom to live and be indoctrinated into their system. Think about how Daniel, all he went through to get to this moment. To get to this moment where he could be with Nebuchadnezzar. Captured. Dragged off. Indoctrinated. Trying to have his identity taken away. Re-educated. New language. New name. That must have been miserable. But God allowed this to happen so Daniel could be with for this moment. You may hate your job. You may hate where you live. You may hate your family. But you've got to be like Daniel and gain this perspective that God is in control, and then ask yourself, if God has put you there, what does he want to use you there for? He's put you there. Be there. As long as he has you there, be there and be with. So it takes that perspective. You know what? God's in control. This may be miserable right now, but God's in control. And if you're in an environment that's miserable with people cursing and talking about garbage and all that kinds of stuff, praise God for that. God's put you in a place where you can actually be with people who are going to really need it and want it and are open and raw about life. Being with takes perspective, and being with takes intentionality. Oh, it's so easy not to do things, isn't it? Isn't it easier not to do things than it is to do things? Not to go out than it is to stay home, right? It's just easier to stay home, not deal with anything, not go and be with anybody else and have to put up with them. Oh, not being with is so much fun. And so it takes intentionality on our part. Being with means I'm going to intentionally say, God, help me. Who do you want me to go? How can I go and be with somebody? It's one of the reasons Christina and I got a dog and plan to get another one hopefully soon, because we work together here in a church. We're always hanging around you people, and we need opportunities that we can get out and be with other people and connect with other people where we can rub off and share life together and help them through moments in their life and be there for moments in their life. We need that intentionality, that plan, in order to be able to go and do that. Do you know anyone in your life right now who doesn't really know Jesus? And you're like with them. Not just someone you know of, but someone you're with. You're doing life with. What can you do intentionally to be with people? If you don't know anybody, then pray, God, help me find somebody. What are you doing to be with? But again, then it's not enough to just be with. If we're going to hold on to our faith, we've got to hold it out for others to see. And that starts by being with others. But then there's something else. It's what do you do when you're there, when you're with them, and the moment hits, and they're looking for truth and for answers? What do you do then? And very simply, point to God. Point to God. Daniel's story doesn't read the way most stories from the ancient Near East reads, or even most of our stories read. Because usually the hero is the one who has that something special that makes them better than everybody else, stronger, faster, smarter, all that stuff. Usually in our stories, the wise men, you know, would have come in and said, oh, king, there's no one in the whole earth that could ever do this. It would have to be like a superhero, divine being to do this. And then I step into the scene. I mean, Daniel steps into the scene and he says, here I am, I'll do it. And then he, you know, here, king, here's what your dream was. Here's what it means. And ha, ha, ha. And then Daniel becomes the king, right? That's the way most of our stories and our imaginations go. But that's not how this goes. That's very unique about this. Daniel instead says, yeah, there's nobody. King, there's nobody who can do this. I certainly couldn't do this. There's a God in heaven who reveals mysteries. For me, no, I don't have wisdom more than anybody else. I mean, what a great moment to say, see, king, you should trust me and forget all these other guys. Yeah, go ahead and kill them. Get rid of them. They're fakes and frauds and phonies. Just elevate me, king. But no, he points to God. I'm not wiser than anybody else, but God has shown this to you because God wants you to understand something. God wants you to understand that even though you're the king, you're only the king because he's given it to you. All the power and authority you have, it's because he's given it to you. You may be in charge, but God is in control. This is what God is showing King Nebuchadnezzar, a lesson he's going to have a hard time learning as we go through this book. So when you're with the person who's hungry and searching, what are you and I going to do? You're going to point to God. Point to Jesus. Simple, right? Simple. But it's practically impossible for us without the three things that we see Daniel doing here. The reason you and I struggle to do this, because it is so simple. Be with, point to God. Be with, point to God. The reason we struggle so much with this is because of these three things that were there in Daniel's life in this story that aren't there or aren't there enough in our lives. And that's what we need to add in so that our advice in those moments, our help in those moments isn't just leaning on the article we read a few days ago. Oh yeah, I read an article that maybe could help you with this. Or, you know, that Psych 101 class you took in college 20 years ago. Or that book you've been reading about atomic habits. And oh, here, you know, try this. So that what you and I say in those moments when we point to God actually comes from God. We need the pieces that were there in Daniel's life. And the first one of those is community. What's the first thing Daniel does when he's confronted with this crisis of the king's going to kill you unless, you know, you can point him to God and point him to the truth? He runs to his friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He runs to his small group, right? I need brothers and sisters around me. Guys, this is the situation. We need to pray. He runs into community, gathers in community. We need that. If you're going to actually be with people and point to God, you need to lean on a community, a small group of other believers. The second thing he does is what? They get on their knees and they pray. And they pray and they pray and they pray. Come out Sunday mornings at 10 o'clock and pray over in the other building. Come out tonight at 6. We've got our prayer and worship night tonight. Be here and let's pray together. Because if we're not praying together, then this may sound simple to just be with and point to God, but you're not gonna do it. You won't be able to do it if you're not being with a small group of people, encouraging each other and praying. And they're praying and praying through the night. And that's when God gives them a revelation. And that's the third thing. We've got to lean on and use the revelation God gives us. Not all the information and knowledge we've accumulated. We don't need more people spewing facts in our world. That's not what we need. We need wisdom from God. And you don't get that unless you're spending time in God's word, in a small group of people praying together. God reveals it to him and he uses the revelation God gives him. Now look, you know, you can't always ask a person, say a friend comes up to you and says, oh, I don't even know what I'm living for anymore. You probably shouldn't say to them, oh, give me 24 hours. Can I have 24 hours? And then run to your small group and say, oh, I've got a friend. No, sometimes you've got to be ready in the moment. You'll see that more in this book of Daniel. And you know what that means? That means that you and I shouldn't wait for the moment of crises when someone stands up and says, hey, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what life is about. That means you and I need to be banking this time together in a small group of people, building each other up, banking time together praying, banking hearing from God, making it a habit so that it's what we're doing all the time so that we're ready in that moment to be able to do what God's put us here to do. Be with and point to him. We need to put that in the bank by practicing it regularly because the point is point to God. Point to God and say, look, there isn't a person on earth who can really answer your questions, who can really satisfy your longing for truth and for something real. But God is here. I don't know why you're experiencing this pain, but I can tell you about Jesus and what he did. I can't tell you the meaning of life, but let me tell you what Jesus said. I can't do anything about your shame, but look at what Jesus did. I can't heal you, but let me tell you about how Jesus overcame death. I can't change your past, but let me tell you what Jesus said he's doing about your future. Be with and point to God. It's that simple. You may have been wondering what this is here for. I'm not like really scared of fire or anything. How many of you know where the fire extinguishers are in this building? Because we really don't have fire extinguishers in this building. There are some scattered around, But everyone wants to know that the fire extinguishers are there when there's a fire. But the fire extinguishers are in the ceiling. And those of you who raised your hand probably knew that. But look up and you'll see there's fire extinguishers tucked in behind the beams. You walk through, there's fire extinguishers. Fire extinguishers are really important, right? Everyone ignores them most of the time. You don't know where they are most of the time. But boy, when there's a fire, what do you really want to know? Where's the fire extinguisher coming from? Right? And is it charged up and ready to go? It's really important that fire extinguishers be ready to do that, that they be where they're supposed to be, which I'm going to have to get that back where it's supposed to be real quick after service, that they're where they're supposed to be and they're ready to go. So really this morning, what I'm saying, simply this, if you walk out with just one thing, be fire extinguishers. Be there. Be present. Be charged up and ready to go. Because look, there's fires going on all around you. I'm not just saying, oh, just go stand around and wait for like the perfect opportunity for someone to come and say, can you tell me about Jesus? I'm not saying that. I'm saying there's already fires going on around you. If you listen, if you're with, you'll see them, you'll detect them. And you and I need to be charged up, ready to go, in place, so that when we detect that fire, we can spray God's truth into that life and bring healing and bring soothing and bring relief, bring truth. That's why Jesus has put you where you are, so that you and I can be with and we can do that. Look, you may be surrounded by people who act like they don't need God or talk like they don't need God and don't think God's real, and yet at the same time, there's a fire burning in their souls. And a time's gonna come when they're gonna cry out in pain from that fire. The job that they've leaned on so much is gonna be taken away from them. A tragedy's gonna strike. Someone they care about is gonna move away and they're gonna lose them. The kids who have been the center of their life will grow older and leave the home, and then they'll feel empty and lost. Their intellect and their scientific reasoning will come to a point where they realize my test tubes aren't big enough to measure everything. And there are questions that are beyond what I can detect with my senses and observation. When their thinking falls apart and they're gonna say, I need more. There's gonna be time when they're reaching out and grabbing for something, anything to put out the fire burning inside of them. And in those moments, you will be present and you will be charged up and you will be paying attention because you're with them, and you'll be able, ready to point to God, to point to Jesus, because of the time you've spent in a group together with other Christians, praying together in God's word, because of the time you've spent hearing from God and allowing him to reveal himself to you. The God you seek daily will give you power and wisdom and insight to point people to his wisdom. That's what we need to be. The worship team, come on back. This morning, I know this room is full of a lot of people who would relate to Daniel, but there's probably a few of you here who might relate more to Nebuchadnezzar today. You're in a place where you are anxious and there are things just disturbing you and troubling you, and you want to know more and you want truth and you want something real, just something real for a change. And this morning, I want to invite you as we sing this song to consider Jesus. Consider who Jesus is. If you're looking for that one thing, the one thing that's real and that's true, then grab hold of what this song is about. About how we're dead and we're broken and we're lost. You know that feeling. And then Jesus has come to rescue us from our sin and give us life. Listen to this song, because what we have to offer is not some philosophic idea. It's the person of Jesus, who loved us so much that he abandoned all his rights being God, became like us, willingly exiled himself from the glory of God's kingdom to be here among us, to suffer ridicule and shame at our hands and die at our hands, because he wanted to crush all these human powers that just are destroying us and tearing us apart and show us something true, something real. God's love and God's power to overcome all human things and transform us and make us new. As we sing this song, just grab hold of that truth. And all the people in the room who relate to Daniel, would you, everybody stand up. And those of you who are Daniel standing here, sing this song with all your guts so that anyone here who's in the Nebuchadnezzar place will hear it and see Jesus. Let's point to Jesus.